Hello. Thank you for joining us, everyone. This is Jeremy Funk with American Center for Change. We're going to get going in 1 second here. I just want to make a quick note before I turn it over to Fred Woodhouse, President of the Americans United. After a brief speaking program, I will turn it open up the floor to questions to members of the media and members of the media only. And if you have a question, to request a question, you press 1, and then I will be able to unmute your line at the at the end of the program. So with that, we'll go ahead and get started. Brad, would you like to kick things off?
Yeah, great. Thanks, Jeremy, and thanks everybody for joining us. And I want to thank John Saltz, my partner here, co-founder and chairman of VoteVets.org, and Mayor Myrna Hettinger of Emmitsburg, Iowa, who we'll get to in a minute. But let me just give a brief overview of a campaign that we're getting involved in with Vote Vets. And just for a little history, Americans United for Change and Vote Vets have been partners in a number of efforts important to Americans, important progressives, going back many years. They include issues like climate, issues like ending the war in Iraq, issues like taking care of veterans. So I'm pleased to be doing this with John, and we are pleased to announce that both Americans United for Change and Vote Vets are joining the fight against big oil and standing up for common sense bipartisan policies that are helping America become more energy independent. The renewable fuel standard, which was signed into law with wide bipartisan support by President George W. Bush, has helped cut America's dangerous dependence on foreign oil. Because of this common sense law, we now get almost 10% of our fuel from clean and renewable sources. For the last several months, the oil industry has been waging a misleading and self-serving scare campaign against this policy. You know, it's hard to take the oil companies and their arguments about gasoline prices seriously, since ethanol actually costs 60 to 80 cents less to produce and saves us all money every time we fill up at the pump. The oil companies don't generally lose sleep over gas prices, but they're certainly very concerned about losing their market share. They have good reason to be worried, since the refuelable fuel standards helped us to steadily reduce our oil imports while steadily increasing our production of homegrown American renewable fuel. In fact, ethanol saves us about $1 billion every week that would otherwise be sent overseas. That money is being invested here at home, making our economy and our country stronger. And the advanced biofuels like cellulosic ethanol and other next-generation fuels are now coming into reality. The first new commercial-scale cellulosic ethanol plant came online in July, and several more are scheduled to begin production in the next several months. Since they can produce fuel without using food crops and can use things like agricultural waste, these next-generation fuels could be transformative economically, environmentally. They are small now, but they are going to quickly become the biggest threat that big oil has ever faced. Big oil is now pressing the EPA to weaken the renewable fuel standards, effectively requiring a less American biofuel and more foreign oil in our gasoline. You know, we are urging all involved, those that have been supporters of renewable fuels, including the president, the EPA, to stand firm against big oil and to stay on the side of our environment, our economy, our national security, and American consumers. I mean, it is irrefutable that these renewable sources of fuel can be made in America. They can't be the jobs that they create can't be shipped overseas. They can't be outsourced. They are better for our economy. We've been tied down in too many conflicts overseas related to securing imports of foreign oil. It can be nothing but good for our economy to reduce our dependence on foreign oil. Now, we as an organization have always been involved in issues of importance to the middle class, particularly economic issues, issues about jobs. What we've been involved in discussion of climate and and gas prices and the subsidies that big oil gets going back many years. And you know what we're going to bring to this, along with Vote Vets, is I would say a focus on four things. Some that Vote Vets is stronger at, and some that we're particularly good at, and I think that's grassroots organizing, earned media, digital media, both free, what you do on Twitter and Facebook and so forth, and paid, and then paid advertising, which we will both Vote Vets and Americans United for Change separately, possibly together, will engage in both nationally and in key states to get this message out to what I would say is a fairly significant degree. So with that, let me turn the call over to my partner in this endeavor, my good friend, the co-founder and chairman of VoteVets.org, John Soltz.
Thanks, Brad. Just a little bit about myself and VoteVets. Served in Kosovo in 2000 and then two tours in Iraq in 2003 and in 2011, as the chairman of VoteVets, we now have 360,000 supporters, 120,000 veterans and military families, and climate issues and national security dependence on foreign oil issues have been a pinnacle of what we've done as an organization. Obviously, we spent about $10 million in 2010 talking about our dependence on foreign oil and how that affects our troops in combat. Obviously, the next year I was back in Iraq. And you know, was on the receiving side of an IRAM attack in Taji, where you know we were hit with about 11 240 millimeter Iranian MiG rockets. So our dependency on foreign oil and our ability to keep the price high in the open market, you know, allows countries like Iran to make millions and millions of dollars daily that they then produce advanced weapon systems that proliferate across the Middle East, that you can see them being used right now in the Syrian conflict, inside of Iraq, and you know, places where U.S. troops, frankly, pay the ultimate price. So when we have a situation last week where potentially we could increase the United States' dependence on foreign oil, our members obviously are very upset, which brings us where we are and why we're going to commit to this campaign. Obviously, there's going to be a hearing period. We're going to mobilize all 360,000 of our activists to let people know that if you go after ethanol, essentially you're funding people who kill our troops, and there's no question about it that oil is a blood diamond inside the Middle East. It's cost us thousands and thousands of lives, and so you know that's a message that we're going to deliver. We're going to deliver it nationally. We'll deliver it locally. We'll deliver it with grassroots, and you know, people can look to our past to see what we've done in regards to paid media. We did a multitude of ads about this stuff in 2010, and I think that most likely that's what we're going to be looking at here going forward, getting veterans' voices in their communities out talking about this issue, people who served in Iraq and Afghanistan. Whenever we do, whether it's paid media or earned media, it's always going to be veterans themselves. And then I think there's a jobs issue. You know, returning employment for Iraq and Afghanistan veterans is extremely high, especially in the lower age groups. Still, a lot of veterans return to rural America. A third of the troops who served in the war are Guard and Reservists who've returned to small towns. And you know, we're going to look at this from the employment side also. It's you know, attacking American jobs at a time when we don't have enough, you know, it's not the time to do that. We've got an unemployment rate that's high amongst these returning veterans, and some of them have come back and chose to work in the ethanol or biofuels industry specifically because of their experience in the war, and these are stories that we look forward to telling and letting people know that, you know, ethanol puts these veterans to work and ethanol it defunds our enemies. And, you know, I think that's a very important message that we'll be delivering. Brad?
Great. Thank you, John. And then let me turn it over to someone who serves in, represents an area, has constituents that are very interested in this issue. Myrna Hettinger, the mayor of Emmitsburg, Iowa. Mayor?
Thank you, Brad, and thank you very much for including me in this. You know, as we know, we live in northwest Iowa, a small rural community of less than 4,000 people, and we were so very excited to be the ones behind or within this pioneering of this ethanol plant. We have been so excited with its growth and what it has given to our community. We live in a very progressive farm area, and this plant means a lot for our local farmers. It lets them utilize every aspect of the corn or crops that they grow, and they know that this plant will process and utilize these crops, and it'll be worldwide, and it'll be within America, and it will not go to foreign soil, which makes it a better tool for economic growth within America. The building of this plant has had a huge impact on our town. About 300 men employed out there on the building, with looking for places to eat, for places to live, and it has been a financial boon for the whole county, as our city itself cannot house that many people at this time. It also means future employment for the young people that we continue to try to draw back to the area, and this will have some jobs that would be appealing to them. And then also it affects the truckers that we have in this area, because there will be lots of use of semis and that kind of equipment, and will give them a further means of income. And so, as I say, we couldn't be happier to have it here, and hope that everybody will continue to support this plan. And thank you.
Great. Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, John. I mean, I think that really is the crux of why we're involved in this. Renewable fuels, what this means to plants here, what it means to the science that's going on here to develop even more advanced sources of biofuels, what it means to communities, what it means to farms. I don't know how anyone could think that it's better for our economy or for jobs to spend one more dollar than we're already spending importing foreign oil. So with that, Jeremy, I'll turn it back over to you to cue people for questions.
As a reminder, we're about to open up the floor to members of the media and members of the media only. If you have a question, press 1 now on your phone. I will unmute your line. So go ahead.
Thank you.
Okay.
Hey, I was at a...
I'm unmuting about 3 lines, so go ahead and speak up. Go ahead.
Okay.
Whoever speaks up first.
Okay, this is Larry Kirshner with Farm
News. Name and outlet, please.
Yeah, name and outlet.
Okay, Larry Kirshner with Farm News in Fort Dodge, Iowa. Am I not being heard?
Yeah, go ahead. Sorry, you're being heard now.
Yep, go ahead.
Okay. The other day I attended an Outlook meeting. Crops market specialist was talking about looking at ethanol with our gas usage, that it looks like ethanol is going to overproduce in 2014. And I guess my question is, isn't that a reason to cut back the RFS?
Well, look, thank you for the question. I mean, look, I think our view here, and look, I'm sure there are people on this call that are more that understand the policy better than John and I do. But here's the bottom line: is that the oil industry didn't go to Congress to try to repeal the renewable fuel standard. They didn't go to the EPA to try to weaken it, because they're concerned about gas prices, utilization of gasoline, or because they're concerned about how much ethanol there is written on the market. They are trying. They're very concerned that as long as corn-based ethanol is prosperous, that there are going to be further advances in more advanced biofuels like cellulosic, that is going to threaten their market share. They're trying to strangle advanced biofuels in the crib by literally cutting off the industry at its knees. So what we're saying is that this would be absolutely the wrong the wrong time to go after biofuels that we know are renewable, that we know are the future of that are a very important part of the future of the fuel supply here in the United States and elsewhere, by the way. I mean, remember, we will not run out of these biofuels. They are and will be, as they are advanced, more and better for the environment, better for the economy, better for jobs. So let's be clear here. The other side, big oil, it's not that they are concerned about consumers or gas prices. They are concerned about their bottom line. And let's remember, they tried to repeal the renewable fuel standard in Congress. So this is not just a debate about how much gas, how much oil, or how much ethanol there is in the market. This is a question of whether or not there's going to be biofuels as an alternative to oil or foreign sources of oil. Jeremy, next question.
Okay. Yep, we have about five lines unmuted for questions. Go ahead.
Hi, this is Amanda Paterko with Greenwire. Can you hear me?
Yeah,
we can hear you. Go ahead.
Great. You mentioned that this has been going on for several months. My question to you is, why now? Is this specifically in response to EPA's proposed action on Friday, or is this sort of coincidental that you're launching this campaign today?
No, and John, you can address this. I mean, I think we have been, John and I have been for seeing the news of what looked like was going to be in the proposed rule and then what was in the proposed rule, and then talking to some of our friends that know more about this issue and what it means for stuff like cellulosic and the advancements of more advanced biofuels. Once the rule came out, we had an idea what the rule was going to look like. The proposed rule, we decided now was the time to join forces. Now, VoteVet's has been very involved in this in the climate issue for some for some time. We have to some extent as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think with VoteVet, obviously, we ran a series of ads around the 2010 climate bill. We've also, done this type of work during people's elections. You know, we just did an ad, for instance, in the governor's race in Virginia on the climate plan, so on Cuccinelli, for instance. So, it's been an issue we've talked about. We did an ad with a member of the Louisiana National Guard who had to clean up the BP oil spill rather than, doing stuff he had signed up to do. So we had a retired two-star general in an ad talking about, our dependence on oil consumption, one out of every three U.S. troops getting killed in Iraq or Afghanistan by IEDs. And so, we use a lot of fuel. Our demand for fuel is so heavy in an asymmetrical battlefield. I mean, certainly I sent a soldier on a mission in 2003, and he was killed delivering fuel. So, this is an issue we worked on for a very long time. What happened last week, obviously, was a trigger point, no question, for our members. And, this is part of the natural drumbeat, and we'll certainly be mobilizing them for this hearing period as we go forward and letting people know this is a national security issue.
Right. Jim Ford, Ethanol Producer Magazine.
Go ahead.
Question, first of all, as a ethanol industry journalist and a fan, I want to thank both of the organizations for joining this fight. I think it's incredibly important. I think it's going to be incredibly difficult. The other thing that I want to, in my question is this, the opposition to renewable fuels in this country have worked together for some time now and have articulated a pretty strong argument against renewable fuels. Clearly, they've gotten the attention of the EPA, and the renewable volumes have been lowered, or that's the proposal. The question that I have for you relative to your constituency is certainly there are veterans that have jobs in these industries that are currently forming an opposition. So, for instance, the turkey folks, certainly there are veterans, there are turkey farmers, the National Council of Chain Restaurants, certainly there are veterans that work at chain restaurants. Domestic oil plays that are happening across this country. Certainly there are veterans that are working in places like the Bakken and various shale plays. How do you articulate to those constituents the continued value of renewable fuels for all the other benefits that you talked about, not funding a commodity that ultimately that money may return to countries like Iran and fund our enemies? How do you articulate that message to those constituents, those veterans that may find themselves working in industries that are opposed to renewable fuels? I'm curious to hear your thoughts on that.
Look, this is John. I mean, obviously, veterans are an eclectic group who on all spectrums of the political debate, but when it comes to biofuels and energy independence, you know, the polls that we've done over the years overwhelmingly support, green technology, for instance, or biofuel technology, because it's very hard to look at someone who's been to Iraq or Afghanistan. For instance, you know, I have a personal story about it, and several personal stories about, these weapon systems costing lives. And so it's a very personal and deep issue where, you know, the numbers are very strong. 75% of people, believe that our dependence on foreign oil costs us lives. And so, if you have people on the other side, we know that not everyone's going to agree, but you have to understand that those are in the minority of veterans. And we're going to continue to take that message forward that biofuels and things like ethanol save lives on the battlefield. And it's not just save lives on the battlefield. It's terrorist groups not being funded to attack the United States or attack our interests overseas. So, if they want to be on the other side of that argument, I get it. But, there's also a jobs argument on the ethanol side and the biofuel side. So I think it's very hard to win that argument. The oil lobby has a lot of messages. They have a lot of money, but they can't make an argument that more foreign oil is better for American security and better for our military. And that's the argument we'll continue to pound forward, because we know from a poll standpoint, including veterans, that an overwhelming amount support our position.
Great, thanks. Jeremy,
I still have three lines open. Go ahead.
This is Amy Mayer from Iowa Public Radio, and my question is for the mayor. I wanted to hear what the progress is on the cellulosic plant in Emmitsburg and how these changes to the RFS might impact progress there.
Well, the changes out there are phenomenal. You can just drive by on a daily basis and see the progress that they're making. They hope to be in working by the middle of next year, April or May. And as I said in my conversation, they have at least 300 employees out there working on that building. And so those employees have been renting places here in Emmitsburg. They've gone as far as West Bend, that's still within Palo Alto County, and of the places that they go for their noon meals and the groceries that they buy. It's had an economic impact on Emmitsburg, but also on Palo Alto County itself.
Great. We still have two lines open for questions. Go ahead.
Hi, this is Ellen Ferguson with Congressional Quarterly. I wanted to get a better sense of the campaign that you plan on launching. Who's going to be your audience? Who are you trying to sway with your arguments?
Well, this is Brad Woodhouse. I think, a couple things. One, we're going to try to reach a whole range of decision makers, right here in Washington. I mean, I think that's, frankly, part of this announcement and doing this call and making sure that they understand that there is that this is not just a big industry, versus one gigantically huge taxpayer-subsidized industry in big oil, but this also has a grassroots component that on our side that there's a progressive support for renewables and for biofuels. And then I think we want to in terms of what VoteVets will be able to generate with its massive grassroots following, and what we'll do digitally, and I think with a pretty significant ad campaign in key states, is to get like-minded folks to speak out during this comment period over the proposed rule. So I think there's a combination of, I think, in what we would call grassroots that we want to reach and grass tops. And I would, if you were looking at this in political campaign terms, I would probably call this as much there's a significant mobilization part to people who already are kind of like-minded in this regard to speak out. And then there's a persuasion piece, too, I think, that's more with less decision-makers and maybe more grass tops in the news media. But, this comment period is, this is a proposed rule. There are changes always made in these things. But beyond that, there was an effort and continues to be an effort by Big Oil to repeal the renewable fuel standard entirely. So, so we're using this opportunity to look for the short term and the long term in that regard.
Okay. We've got two more questions in the queue, and then I think we'll bring the call to a close today. All right, go ahead.
This is Joanna Schrader from domesticfuel.com. Can you hear me?
Okay, go ahead.
Okay. This question is for the mayor. I know that when you're referencing the ethanol plant, you're talking about the POET DSM plant on the cellulosic side, and then POET also has a first-generation ethanol facility. But what I want you to better speak to is what the economic impact would be if, one, that cellulosic facility never goes into production, and secondly, what happens if this industry dies, what happens if the first-generation plant were to shut down?
Well, I should hope that your question isn't even necessary to be answered, because I have no thought that this is going to happen. I mean, this is... I think it's a plan for the future, and everything moves forward on things that are different than dependency on another country for our fuel. And I think that if people realize the importance of this, they will continue to support the ethanol plants and help us to keep our money in our own country to make us more economically viable.
Well, a follow-up, Myrna, but you're talking about...
All right, we have one more question in the queue from a 202 number. Go ahead.
Hi, this is Alicia Mundian with the Wall Street Journal here in Washington. I wanted to go back to the question that the reporter from CQ asked about regarding your audience. And you, Brad, I think it was you who took the answer. You talked about significant mobilization and persuasion piece. From the outside perspective here, looking at this, the ecology groups and environmental groups have made a really strong case that the situation for the side effects of growing all the corn for the ethanol and everything is not good for the environment, and the car manufacturers have raised a kind of unfortunate issue that says, hey, if we start putting that much more ethanol in, we really could face some issues with how these cars are running. And both of those are pretty significant issues, not necessarily, neither one of them is particularly helpful to the oil industry or big oil. It just has to do with some really major issues that have to be tackled. And I'm trying to figure out what your plan is for getting a message out that this is about dependency on foreign oil when you've got, your touchy-feely green group saying it would be better for the environment if we weren't doing ethanol. I mean, they're not part of the mafia, and
right.
And you have car companies raising a realistic scare that a lot of people in America all of a sudden will wake up and have rattling cars that won't go fast.
Well, a few things. One, with respect to the car manufacturers, I think they sell cars in Brazil, and I believe that they have 25% ethanol in their gasoline there, and they still seem to be selling cars there. I've heard all types of horror stories about E15 as it relates to boats. I'm a boater. I've never had a problem with it. I think And I don't know, you know, I can't speak 100% to the legitimacy of the car company's concerns, but like I said, I think there are, you know, plenty of, I have the feeling that they're overstating the case. Now, with respect to the environment and ecological issues, I think one of the things I would say to my friends on that side is, one, you know, sometimes you got to pick. You know, I mean, foreign oil, and, you know, people on that side that complaining about the ecological or environmental impacts of ethanol, they don't like oil either. And so, you know, we're talking about dependence on foreign oil, which they consider, you know, and rightly so, contributing to climate change and being bad for the environment, or the environmental concerns they have over ethanol. But beyond that, and if forced to choose, and I'm not forced to choose, but have chosen, I'll take the side of growing corn. But beyond that, There is the issue of the standard and the money that the folks like Poet are willing to spend to create the next set of advanced biofuels, which are less food dependent, less intensively growing dependent, that can use more agricultural waste than is used in corn-based ethanol, and that those investments aren't going to be made if the renewable fuel standard goes away, or if investments in renewable fuels or the ability to make money on current renewable fuels to make investments in new technologies, go away. So, you know, then we're just gonna have more foreign oil, which those friends of mine that are on the environmental side, they don't like that either. So I believe that and the reason we're doing this is that we need to strengthen the renewable fuel standard, not weaken it. We need to encourage investments to be made. Encourage the investments to be made in cellulosic and other cleaner, more environmentally sensitive biofuels and biofuel advancements in the future. So that would be my answer. And I think we've got to run the campaign that we can run to first strengthen the rule, the final rule that comes out from the EPA, and then we've got attendant to that, hopefully, persuade people on some of these other issues, but you know we're going to run the campaign that we can to persuade and mobilize as many people as we can using all the traditional campaign methods.
Okay, we've got one final question, and this will be the last question of the call from a 661 number. Go ahead. Well, hello. Well, I guess that caller is dropped off. Okay, well, seeing no more questions, I think we can bring this call to an end today. Thank you, everybody, for joining.
Jeremy, thank you. I want to thank the mayor. I want to thank John. I want to thank everybody for joining us. We will have more details about our plans, but you'll see them because we're obviously going to tell you about them. They'll definitely involve some ads here in the not-too-distant future and a lot of good work in great states like the mayors there in Iowa. So thank everybody for joining us, and we'll be in touch.